This is Gridiron Graduates, a weekly podcast covering all things football. Episode number 51, GOAT, recorded November 2nd, 2016.
Wild Bill, we're excited to hit you guys back up on another edition of the Gridiron Graduates. Hope you guys had a wonderful couple of weeks since it's been a while since we talked to you, but we're back, ready to get back in it. And of course, as always, my good buddy Ian Wharton on the other side. Ian, what's going on, my man?
Hey, not too much, man. Just watching the Cubs here, about to finish up this World Series win. And congrats to them, congrats to their fans. Obviously, I was pulling for the Indians, but you know, we got our Cavs title, and I didn't expect the Indians to make it this far, so I'm doing all right. Just disappointed. Yeah, we obviously got so close to winning this series. Being up 3-1, people are going to think that the jokes turn the other way, but they don't. It's still going to be really funny because the Warriors were the first ever NBA team to give up a 3-1 lead, and it's actually happened a lot in baseball. So it's not too fun. That's not really – they can turn around the jokes. I don't care. You still have to acknowledge that the Cavs won the title. So I'm still a winner in the end. So.
And, I mean, the thing is, it's not like the Indians were – you know, the greatest show on earth coming into the series like the Warriors were.
Exactly.
So they have that going. I mean, this was an improbable run. No one thought the Indians would be up 3-1 in the series. No one even expected the Indians to even make it this far. Like,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't remember too much as far as like what the preseason projections were, but I'm pretty sure.
It was like first or second in the division, but yeah. I mean, Carrasco went down, Michael Brantley went down, Salazar was hurt. Like, it's pretty tough to win without literally three of your top, like, seven players overall.
Exactly.
So, I mean, they had a great year. I mean, they were on the cusp of winning, and, you know, obviously a couple things go a different couple ways the last couple games, and, you know, maybe we're sitting in a different position. But, hey, it is what it is. Before the series, I said this: if the Indians were going to lose to anyone, I'm glad it's the Cubs. I know what it's like to see your team lose a lot of times, and you know, it's exciting. I hope that they enjoy it. Hopefully, the Indians come back stronger next year.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and of course, back in my hometown, Hazleton, we're about to party as well because. Obviously, Joe Maddon from here, as I've mentioned before, so this town will be pretty happy as well. So I'll be looking for the party soon. but in any event, let's go ahead and jump right into this. We're actually going to start with some college talk today because the college football playoff rankings, the first set of them at least, just came out this week. So we'll go ahead and discuss them a little bit and. Obviously, no surprise, Alabama, Clemson, and Michigan made up the top three spots. We all kind of expected that. I mean, you know, compared to the polls, Clemson and Michigan kind of flip-flopped. But, you know, it kind of makes sense, too, because Clemson has played a little bit of a tougher schedule than Michigan has. But, obviously, as the leaders of the Big Ten, Michigan certainly deserves to be in that spot. All the talk, of course, though, was the fact that Washington, who was expected to be at number 4, was not at number 4. They came in at number 5, and Texas A&M, who, of course, has the loss to Alabama, was slotted at number 4. Now, obviously, that is, you could argue that's because of the fact that A&M's played a tougher schedule than Washington, which is fair. They have. You know, Washington's non-conference schedule was not good. A&M's was obviously better. I mean, at the start of the season, looked better, you know, beating a top 25 UCLA team at the time. Now, of course, the Bruins sitting at 3-5, but still. But, you know, let's not panic, obviously. Let's face it. If Washington wins out, they'll be in the playoff, because the playoff, the committee isn't going to leave out an undefeated Pac-12 champion. But for now, A&M's at 4. Washington is at 5, then Ohio State at 6, Louisville 7, Wisconsin 8, Auburn 9, Nebraska rounds out the top 10. So, what's your takeaway so far on the first set of the playoff ranks?
Yeah, I think that obviously everyone's going to look at the Washington and Texas A&M. Texas A&M, obviously, it's a huge storyline. I mean, it's a little bit surprising. I think they're a really good team, but, you know, for Washington, I think Washington's absolutely legit. I haven't been able to see the Huskies too much this year, but we can play the results games and we can look and see, you know, in retrospect. And I'm excited to actually get a look at them this weekend against California. I'll be watching them. But this is I think Washington's absolutely elite. This is a team loaded with talent on both sides of the ball. We tend to forget about them because they're on the West Coast and they play Pac-12 after dark football games. And their toughest test is not only going to be Cal, but Washington State. And those are two very winnable games. And obviously, they'll have the Pac-12 title game. But, you know, I'm with you here. I think Washington fans, I know you're upset. I hear you. I get it. I totally understand why. But understand, if you went out and you take care of business, you're going to be in the Final Four teams. Because even last year, the changes that happened from even here in the last month of the football season, teams are going to lose. There's going to be possibly two teams in the top four that lose at some point, whether it's Michigan to Ohio State or it's an upset like Alabama against LSU, even Clemson. I think Clemson's vulnerable. I don't think that they're 100% lock to make the playoff, to win out and make the playoff, I should say. They've looked vulnerable at times, for sure, especially on offense. They do play like an experienced team, but I still think that that's a team that, you know, all it takes is one team to get hot and to you know, score. Shoot, they should have lost that NC State game. So they're definitely a vulnerable team as well. Louisville, we can't forget about Louisville either. But what we're looking at here is you've got three one-loss teams, Ohio State, Louisville, and Texas A&M. They're just ready to pounce. If Michigan loses or Washington or Clemson loses, I don't think Alabama's going to lose. I think they're going to be able to win out. But, you know, one of these teams loses, it's going to be hard for them to slide back up without multiple teams in front of them taking a stumble. And so my big takeaway right now is Texas A&M, you guys aren't in the driver's seat, but you guys are in a good position. And it's just, you just kind of, what I'm most interested, I think, in seeing is that if one of these teams falls, and it's, let's say Michigan and Alabama win out, they're for sure going to be in the playoff. That's 100%. So now my question would be, if Texas A&M's a one-loss team, Washington's a one-loss team, Louisville's a one-loss team, and Clemson's a one-loss team, who all would go in that scenario? Like, that to me would be fascinating. Mm-hmm. I would really be interested in seeing who would be going. And we actually have a little bit of a way to kind of tell here. Because thanks to 538, which, you know, they're you know, pretty hit or miss. I mean, their statistical-based website, the ESPN, I think, sponsors. But they made a really cool predictions, kind of like a, almost like a, an interactive column. You guys should check it out. It's projects.538.com/2016college football predictions/. You can actually go in and you can choose your own scenario as to see the odds of what would happen if certain scenarios play out. So I've got here, I've got Alabama, Clemson, and Michigan winning out. The chances for Alabama winning out is 38%. Clemson 53%, Michigan 35%. Then I've also got Washington winning out, Louisville and Texas A&M all winning out. Washington 25%, Louisville 64%, Texas A&M 30%. So, I mean, obviously you can hear there's a couple of these teams. Someone's going to lose. Some of these teams are going to lose for sure. The question is who. And so let's just say that that unlikely scenario happens. They've got Alabama, Clemson, and Michigan a lock to make the playoffs. And in this scenario, they actually have Washington beating out Texas A&M by 9%. They think that they would have a 40% chance to make the playoff if Washington goes undefeated. So that's what it comes down to for your Husky fans. Go undefeated, win that Pac-12 championship, just like you said, and chances are very good that you're going to be able to make the playoff, and I think really do some damage in the playoff if they can get there.
I also just got to make a note of how surprised I was seeing Penn State come in at number 12 in the initial ranks. That's surprising. I figured they'd hover around, you know, where they were in the polls at 20 or so, but number 12, I mean, they obviously really value that win over Ohio State, apparently. And it actually puts Penn State in a little bit of a position where some of the teams ahead of them lose, like, say, Auburn, Wisconsin, Nebraska. Penn State could sneak their way into one of those New Year's Six bowl games. Because I kind of ran through quick projections with these rankings. I think the last team in the New Year's Six right now would actually be Nebraska. But it would actually become Auburn. Nebraska would bump out. Auburn would move in. Would be the last team if, say, you would flip A&M and Washington. But really interesting to note that. And, you know, with another interesting race is always the Group of Five race. You know, which team out of the Group of Five is going to get that spot. And, you know, right now it's Western Michigan, ranked 23rd at 8-0, but Boise State right on their heels, even with the one loss. So, you know, that's always a fun race to watch. I'd like to see Western Michigan get in there, too. You know, it's always pretty fun to see some of these smaller schools, like these MAC schools in there, make a run at the big boy bowls. And, you know, you figure if Western Michigan wins out, then they'll play in the Cotton Bowl, because if you look at it, pretty much all the non-playoff bowls this year are contract bowls, except for the Cotton Bowl. So really, it's only the one available bowl for the Broncos, but I mean, still, you know, for them to play in the Cotton Bowl as a MAC school, that'd be impressive. So I'd like to see that for sure, against one of these big boy schools.
Yeah, and obviously with Penn State, I mean, that was pretty surprising to me too. Obviously beating Ohio State on one of the craziest fourth quarters I can remember. And it's been a fairly crazy last couple of years too. A lot of stuff went right for Penn State. A lot of stuff went wrong for Ohio State. That's just the game of football. Sometimes that happens. But obviously a tremendous win, keeping James Franklin in town for a couple years to the delight of all Big 12, Big 10 coaches alike. So we're all happy that he got that signature win so that James Franklin won't be leaving the Big 10 anytime soon. But in all seriousness, yeah, obviously a huge win for them. And, yeah, they've got a really good opportunity. It's funny, this team actually looks a lot better without Christian Hackenberg at the helm. Same offense. So it's kind of interesting to see. But yeah, no, they're absolutely a legit team. And it will be interesting to see. I mean, the Big Ten this year is just absolutely loaded. You've got, obviously, Wisconsin. They've been doing good things all year. Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State. We talked about those guys a lot throughout the year. Nebraska, they're really an interesting team. I know they lost to Wisconsin last week. They play Ohio State this weekend. Big opportunity for them to show. I mean, they played Wisconsin tough. They held in it till the end. If they can do the same against Ohio State, they have a chance to win. And Ohio State hasn't been very impressive the last couple weeks. So Nebraska has a chance. But, you know, it's just good to see. I'm a big fan of the Big Ten Conference in general. And, you know, if Penn State can kind of get back into, like you said, the New Year's Six Bowl, it'd be kind of exciting for them. It'd be a nice kind of change of pace. But they've got a lot of competition, though, to get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just to remind you all one more time, that's five Big Ten teams among the top 12 of the first college playoff rankings. Just throw that out there one more time because it's fun. But looking at some of the games this week, as far as like ranked teams, there's only two matchups of top 25 teams. You mentioned Nebraska, Ohio State, and then, of course, Alabama taking on LSU. Penn State's got Iowa in a night game. Other than that, you know, not a whole lot going on. But, you know, it should be interesting.
Yeah, I'm disappointed. Of course, this is the weekend where it's a little bit of a lighter slate. like you mentioned, Bama to LSU, that's always going to be a game that people are going to turn to. But especially Leonard Fournette is a guy that struggled last year in this matchup. He's been banged up a little bit this year, had a monster performance 2 weeks ago. Can he and Darius Geis carry this offense, literally, against a really, really good Alabama team? I don't know. I'm looking forward to when Reuben Foster and Leonard Fournette run into each other, because those are two unstoppable forces coming down, playing each other in the box. That's going to be really exciting. I mentioned Ohio State and Nebraska as well. I think both teams have a lot to prove, not only to themselves, but also to the country. Washington against Cal, I think that's going to be a barn burner. I can't wait to see that. It's going to be another hashtag Pac-12 after dark. Should be a good game. Two good quarterbacks, Jake Browning, Davis Webb. I think both of those guys are going to be drafted in the NFL within the next 2 years. Davis Webb's a senior. Jake Browning, he's just a sophomore, so he's not draft eligible. But both of them look like they've got NFL stuff. Let's see here, taking a look throughout the rest of the day, it really is not a great slate of games, and it's strange. You usually get to this part of the season, and there usually are games up and down the schedule. So, you know, I talked about this early in the season, but, you know, I know I'm doing something in the morning with my wife just from 8 to noon, so, you know, I'm going to miss a little bit of the early slate of games, but I recommend you guys do the same thing, too. Get some chores out of the way. If you want to watch an early game, Texas Tech and Texas, I think, would be a lot of fun. You can see Pat Mahomes for Texas Tech. He's a really good player. Really fun backyard type of quarterback. He's like a mix of like Johnny Manziel and Derek Carr. So he's a lot of fun. You could also check out Clemson versus Syracuse in the middle of the afternoon. The more looks that we can get at Deshaun Watson, the better. I'm not in love with him, but I do like him. I think he'll probably be a first-round quarterback. I think he does deserve that as well. Syracuse, though. Syracuse, watch for Syracuse, man. They might be able to upset them. It's not at the Carrier Dome, so that's a little bit of bad luck, at least for their argument. But they have a great wide receiver. I'm not going to butcher his name. But he was a four-year player at Maryland, and he transferred to Syracuse. He's been fantastic. He might be a top five wide receiver in this class as a senior. So not a great day of football, but you know what? As I say that, it ends up usually being a day full of drama and good games. So, you know, listen to me. Don't listen to me. I'll probably be wrong. Hopefully it's a day of a lot of exciting games, because at the end of the day, sometimes when it's not any obvious matchups, that's usually some of the best days.
They're the ones that come out and have the most excitement as we're watching the Indians try to fight back in this one.
They're trying, but I am a jaded Cleveland fan. I will refuse to believe it's going to happen.
You just don't want to jinx it yet.
No, not at all. I honestly don't believe that it's going to happen. So it's, you know, the Cavs can only do so much for me to get over the doubt that kind of creeps in after so many years of struggling.
It's that hope for the best, prepare for the worst scenario.
Exactly.
So let's ship over to the pros and talk about some interesting stuff that happened over the last couple weeks while we were away. The fact that we've had two ties in the last 2 weeks. What the hell? That's really all you can say about that.
Almost had a third tie.
That we almost, yes, we did. Oakland, Tampa Bay, I believe, went pretty late.
Yep.
Because that went inside the 2-minute warning, so that nearly ended in a tie. The Dallas Philly game went to overtime, and I think that was about halfway done. Before Dallas scored. Boy, what is with all these ties anymore? Because this is now five ties in the last five seasons, and the first time now in almost 20 years that two games in the same season ended in a tie. At least the Washington-Cincy game was pretty high scoring. Seattle-Arizona 6-6, and boy, oh my goodness gracious.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
Holy crap.
As we're watching the recording right now, Rajay Davis just tied the game at 6 off Rawlins Chapman. Oh my gosh.
I cannot believe.
Oh my God. Consider this our short break right now during the podcast while we just enjoy the craziness that just happened in Cleveland. Mr. Fastball himself just gave up 3 runs in about a third of an inning.
Oh man, it hit like the camera there too. That was awesome. And I was thinking last night too, like, why are they pitching Chapman? Like, why are you giving Cleveland another look at Chapman? Holy smokes. And they benched Naquin for Davis because Naquin had struggled so much in the field. And Davis made a mistake earlier catching a fly ball. He didn't square up very well, and he was late to let go of the ball. And that's how one of the runs came in for Chicago. Unbelievable.
Wow. Just absolutely unbelievable. And look at the, oh my goodness, and now the leading run is on first base. Before I get too far off base, yeah, so, yeah, I want to talk quick, too, about that Seattle-Arizona game. That's where we kind of left off, especially the overtime, because it was 3-3 going in, and then both teams kicked a field goal, but then just to see how bad they missed the field goals, especially Seattle. I mean, you had a shot right in the center of the field after making such a great drive, and then Hauschka just badly missed it. Just unbelievable.
Especially for him. He's such a good kicker.
He's really good. Hauschka's one of the better kickers. So, yeah, definitely surprising to see the way that he just absolutely shanked it, because that kick never had a chance. I didn't get a chance to see much of the Washington-Cincinnati game, but, you know, obviously just looking at the score, you know, 27-27, but, you know, missed field goals led to the tie in that one as well, so, but I mean, the good news for Washington is it keeps them above 500, whereas Cincinnati is still below 500, and what's become a little bit of a disappointing season, or a disappointing start, for the Bengals, you know, sitting underneath.
Oh, that's going to be a great gift.
We just saw LeBron James look like Hulk Hogan, so you'll be seeing that on Twitter very soon. Oh, it's already on Twitter. There it is. I just saw it from CBS. Oh, no, that's not CBS. That's J.R. Smith taking a share. Oh, my goodness. Well, this is what happens when you record during Game 7 of the World Series, I guess.
Yeah.
But in any event, but yeah, certainly some crazy. And then, you know, Philly-Dallas, what a game by Dallas. You know, Dak didn't play all that well in the beginning, and then all of a sudden he turns on the Jets and just rallies the Cowboys. And now the boys are sitting at 6-1 and in total control of the NFC East through the first half of the season.
Yeah, and I mean, it kind of spurs more the conversation of, you know, well, one, is Ezekiel Elliott, yes, he's the rookie of the year. Is he the MVP of the league? And two, what on earth do you do at quarterback?
Yeah.
I mean,
just further fueling that debate.
Yeah, I mean, Dak's been good. He has been. You can make a great argument for him to stay in there. I just feel like if Romo is 100%, you know, I think he's just a better player than Dak. And I feel like you can always go back to Dak if you have to.
Absolutely.
He's running a fairly simple offense, and that's not to disparage anything from him, but he's working off the running game, which is very smart. And Romo should do the same, by the way. You should protect Romo as well as you can. But I would like to see this team with Romo. It's like that forbidden fruit where it's like you can't quit him because you know how good he is. And I would hate to bench Dak, but you know, obviously they're in a great position. I don't think they're in a losing position here. I think it's a win-win. Worst case scenario, you put Romo in, he struggles, you bench him, you put Dak in, Dak struggles, but that shouldn't be the case. That shouldn't be the case at all, because we've seen, we've already seen Dak come in tough circumstances and be able to play right away. And he already has that confidence now that's been built in. So, you know, I'm fascinated by their situation. I think they're the best team in the NFC. And considering that, they can take a risk. They can take a small risk. I think it is a small risk, too. I don't think it's a huge thing that's going to upset the chemistry of this roster. They're going to get Dez Bryant back eventually, too. So, you know, either way they play it, I think it's a decent decision. I'm just fascinated to see it play out, especially with the Vikings news, with North Turner resigning.
Yep.
And continued injuries on their front. It's going to be really, really fascinating to see, because they could play it conservative and roll with Dak, and I don't think that's a bad idea. Or they can go, obviously, back to Romo, play it more aggressively and say, hey, we're in this to win it all this year, and we're not going to take any chance. We're going to take the chances that it's required to make sure we ensure that happens. So, you know, what's your take on that? Because, I mean, I could be swayed either way, but right now I'm saying go with Romo.
Yeah, I still feel they're going to go back to Romo once he's fully healthy, too, because, I mean, it is his team, and they're probably going to feel, too, that, you know, if Dak's able to do this with what little experience he had, you know, you have to think Romo is going to give him more of that edge and give him maybe a little more of a push to, you know, make a playoff run. Because, like, again, at this point, they've got control of the division. You know, they have a little bit of breathing room. And, you know, you mentioned the Vikings, who are quietly crumbling in front of our eyes. You know, the offense has been sputtering. You mentioned North Turner just resigned. So, you know, things are really looking up right now for the Cowboys. So it wouldn't be terrible to go back to Romo. I think it would be, you know, we'll say like a calculated risk. You know, and if he goes on fire, then great. You know, the Cowboys are potentially the favorites in the NFC. If it backfires, just go back to Dak Prescott. You know, like you said, you know, it's not set in stone that once you go back to Romo, he's still the starter. You know, you can easily throw Dak right back in there. But, yeah, eventually I think once he's ready to go, you're going to put Dak back in there, or you're going to put Romo back in there, excuse me. You know, again, this is just kind of them being able to have built that cushion, you know, having the two-game lead and basically having the tiebreaker at this point. So they're in a pretty good spot right now. They really are. And who'd have thought we'd be saying that 8 weeks into the season? The Dallas Cowboys are in a good spot and potentially the favorites in the NFC.
Yeah, exactly. Interesting part with the Vikings is their offense started out really well at the beginning of the year, and they've kind of struggled here recently, which isn't a surprise. I mean, they're without Adrian Peterson, they're without their like three or four offensive linemen. So it's pretty insane that they've even been 5-2, and now they lose Norv Turner. Norv Turner just quit. Like, everything that's come out is that it was unexpected. You know, it's unprecedented, really, to see something like this happen. So, you know, I'm excited to see how they respond. We have Pat Shurmur, a guy who's worked with Sam Bradford multiple times before, really struggled in Cleveland when he was a coach there. Obviously, he was put in a situation that he shouldn't have been. But he's done, I think, some okay things as offensive coordinator since his Cleveland days. And I'm interested to see now, can he adapt Minnesota to, you know, see how Minnesota can go ahead and make this adjustment now, because that's a tough adjustment, I think, middle of the season. My guess is obviously you're not going to change too much stuff as far as mid-season adjustment. You're not going to change the offense too much. You could change the play calling and some tendencies, and I think that maybe that's where we see this go. But overall, I'm still a fan of the Vikings. It's just it's going to be hard for me to say that they're a serious title contender with that offensive line.
Oh yeah, no doubt. You know, especially the way they struggled against the Bears.
Yeah, that was really a surprising one. And in primetime games, sometimes it happens. And obviously, Cutler was back. Cutler played well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was a pretty shocking result. Like, I know some people at work had the Vikings in their pool, in their survivor pool.
Yeah,
and obviously, they took a bad loss on that one, but.
Yep.
You know, what are you going to do? I mean, the Bears have been one of the worst teams in the NFL. I mean, they still have a top five pick right now projected at the end of the season. So it's like that's a pretty bad team if you're winning and you're still in top five picks.
Mm-hmm. So let's kind of look ahead to week 9 here. You know, certainly got some interesting matchups. I think definitely one of the highlights of the week is the Sunday night game between the co-leaders of the AFC West, the 6-2 Broncos, and the 6-2 Oakland Raiders. We figured the Raiders would be pretty good, but I think they've even exceeded expectations a little bit. So it's certainly a big opportunity for them getting a home primetime game. They win this, they get to 7-2, lead the AFC West, and I think the most impressive part of this with the Raiders has been the fact that 5 of those 6 wins have been on the road. And now they don't play a true road game for about a month. You know, they do have the game in Mexico City coming up. But, like I said, they don't play a true road game now till December. So, if you're the Raiders, you got to be feeling pretty good about yourself. Especially the fact that, you know, you have 3 teams in the AFC West with 2 losses. The next closest, and all 3 of those teams will be in the playoffs right now, the next closest is 4 losses. So, if you're if you're all 3 teams in the AFC West, you're feeling pretty good about your chances right now of getting into the playoffs, especially if you keep winning and keep taking care of business.
Yeah, it's the Raiders. What's interesting to me is they really haven't played a good team yet. So I'm interested to see how they play the Broncos. I'm not fully bought into the Raiders just because of their defense, but very impressive. I think Derek Carr's had a very good year so far, obviously. I mean, that's hard to dispute. I know this week's been a little weird of a backlash that we've seen against him. I mean, look, he's not a perfect quarterback. Is he elite? I don't know. I don't know if I'd go that far. I don't know if he needs to be elite. All I know is that he's made big plays at the right time, and he's kept his team in it when the defense has really struggled. So to me, that matters. And at the end of the day, that's what matters most, is that he's helping his team win. But this is a huge showdown, and I can't wait for Sunday Night Football this week. It's much more interesting than I think most of the other games on the schedule. You mentioned for the AFC West, the Chiefs play the Jaguars. Not a huge game in terms of grand scheme of things. But I am interested to see if Nick Foles plays. It sounded like earlier today Alex Smith is going to be held out, even though he doesn't have a concussion. There's still symptoms there, even if he wasn't diagnosed with a concussion. And so that's really interesting to me. How does Nick Foles play? Because Nick Foles looked actually fairly decent last week. And this goes to the Andy Reid / Doug Peterson coaching tree. I know Doug Peterson's in Philadelphia doing a good job. But those are two guys that have had a lot of success with quarterbacks like Nick Foles that aren't necessarily the best player when they come into a situation. But then as soon as they come to Kansas City, and they're maximizing their potential. And so I think Alex Smith, he's a very limited guy, but I still think what he's accomplishing in Kansas City relative to his talent level is still pretty respectable. And if Foles can put up a good performance, you know, obviously I think they're going to win either way. But I am just interested. That's kind of like a mini storyline, I think, that I'm interested to find out more about this Sunday. And So that's going to be another game I'm not going to have my eye on live. I'm going to watch it back, obviously, probably this time next week. But really the other game I'm probably going to be paying close attention to, because it's not a great slate of games this week. I'm interested in seeing the Lions and Vikings. Matt Stafford's been playing really well this year. We talked about the Vikings a little bit, but the Lions are a team, they're trying to hang in it. Offensively, they've changed their identity over the last couple of years. Matt Stafford's playing, I think, the best ball of his career. And they've got a deep array of receiving threats for them. Anquan Boldin's making plays. Dude's 530 years old, still getting open and still making tough catches. So, those are definitely two games I'm looking at. Obviously, the Thursday night game, Falcons-Buccaneers, I think that'll be an interesting game. And Monday night football, Bills-Seahawks. That's kind of an interesting game, too. It's going to be unique to see those two quarterbacks, two good young quarterbacks, playing each other. So, and against a couple of good, respectable defenses as well. So it's going to be a fun slate of games. But, you know, really it's the primetime games that have my big focus.
Yeah. I mean, even the late game on CBS, Andrew Luck and Aaron Rodgers on the same field, Colts taking on the Packers. So, you know, some interesting matchup. And, of course, Pittsburgh-Baltimore, that's always good. You know, it's always a good rivalry. And, you know, maybe we see Big Ben this week. We don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they could use him back. I mean, it's they are just a totally different team without him. And I mean, obviously, most teams in the league are much different without their starting quarterback, especially if you've got an above-average starting quarterback like they do. Mm-hmm. So that's not shocking news, but you know, they've got to get him back. I think this is a key game for them as well. You can't afford to lose too many divisional games, especially when, you know, you're in the thick of things, not only against the Ravens, but also the Bengals as well. So for them to create some more breathing space for the rest of the season, hopefully Big Ben can play and be close to 100%.
So with that, I think we'll kind of wrap it up here. I think, as always, we've got some good stuff out there. And you know, when we come back next week, we'll see if Ian's actually going to celebrate a World Series title. It's tied at 6 as we leave here, so we'll see. But as the Cubs ground, and now they don't ground to a double play, but they do almost get the lead runner.
Yep, almost got it.
That's still good. So, yeah. You know, thanks as always for listening. You know, really do appreciate it. Again, follow us on Twitter at NFL Film Study, at Bill_Rossetti. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the games as always this week. And until next time, take care, my friends.